This is Cloistered Away, a podcast for mothers, homeschoolers, and women eager to develop a rich family culture within their homes. Here, we move against the modern hustle and cultural noise to slow down and consider how to live with wisdom, beauty, and joy in the various places in which God has set us. I'm your host, Bethany Douglas, the voice behind the Cloistered Away website and Substack. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Cloistered Away podcast. Today, we're going to talk about marriage and specifically the relationship with our husbands. Last time, we talked about the soul and the heart of the home, because as women, we set the atmosphere of our homes. So we discussed the Proverbs in Proverbs 4, where the heart and our soul is the wellspring of life for those around us, including our husbands, which is why we're talking about that today. In marriage, we're speaking about it in the context of a fruitful home. So at the foundation, we talked about Cloistered Away being this context for fruitful growth of people within the context of a home. So that's why we're talking about marriage being the bedrock for this. So first, the governance of our home, next, the relationship with our husbands. We realize that this can be a really tender topic for many women, whether because of a longing for marriage, a hurting marriage, a death of a husband, or a failed marriage. The Lord's so gracious in how He meets us and grows us right where we are. In every circumstance, He's our hope. So today, let this conversation draw you upward in hope and not downward in shame. Today, we're going to talk about the wife vine, as my husband calls it. So Mark, would you like to explain what you mean by that, the wife vine?
Oh, you mean to tell me that not everybody just intuitively knows what a wife vine is? Okay, I guess this actually should be a moment where I haven't said anything about this prior to now, but I'm part of a community of men called the Viceroy Project, and you can find out more about that at theviceroyproject.com. But part of how we train men to govern their homes is we use this verse from Psalm 128, and it says this: "For when you eat the fruit of your labor, blessing and prosperity will be yours." And I like that because I think, okay, I like the idea of eating fruit of labor and blessing and prosperity following. That sounds good to me. But the next verse says this: "What is it that you're laboring toward?" It says, "Your wife will be like a fruitful vine flourishing within your house, your sons like olive shoots sitting around your table." So we keyed in on that and realized, oh, there is a picture here, metaphorical language of a wife being a fruitful vine in the center of one's home. So when I think about, well, what do I need to do in terms of laboring to make sure that my wife is fruitful and well tended and taken care of? Well, there's a lot of those things. That's a kind of a long list of things, actually. So I need to be concerned about nutrition. What are the inputs to her soil? Is she being harassed by something? I need to be able to take care of pests that might be swarming around her. Is there something that is kind of, some wilty part that is kind of deformed or needs to be plucked off or repaired? All of those things are part of my responsibility when I'm taking care of my wife vine. The really great thing about a fruitful vine in the center of your house, like in a Cloistered Away image, is that she's very fruitful. And that fruiting can look like actual children that are fruitful. Mm-hmm. It can look like she takes a few dollars I give her every month and then makes a beautiful table. She puts wonderful food on that table. She brings joy and beautiful decoration. There's lots of wax candles around. There's all these things that guys never would naturally build into their environments. If you want to look at what a man would build for an environment, look at like a Home Depot or a Quonset military hut. think utility first, and whatever is or isn't beautiful, definitely way down that list. So part of a fruitful, wonderful environment is what is happening with a healthy wife vine.
Mm-hmm. And last week we talked, you know, about gardening or gardening, I guess on some way, yes. But we talked about guarding our souls and, you know, how making that time for reflection, making that time for quiet with the Lord and to tend our souls with the scriptures being one aspect of that. And I would say that secondary, having my husband, Mark, to be a filter, even at times for external voices or even internal narratives I might have, to be able to say, well, that's not true, is that? Or have you thought about this? Just having that type of voice for that, knowing, just as he just expressed, knowing that he is looking out for my well-being because he knows also my well-being impacts the atmosphere of our home, that it impacts his well-being as well as our children, as well as all of the outworkings of our household, even right here in Cloister Way, whether it's in my writing or whether it's in relationship within our community. So
I was just thinking, there's another verse in the New Testament that says that he who loves his wife loves himself. I think that's New Testament. But the point being that if I have a fruitful vine in the center of my home, not only is it like joyful and beautiful, but that vine imagery is sort of connected to viticulture and wine. So a wife that is in really good condition and produces lots of grapes and fruit, she kind of serves as a wine, an intoxicating effect in the home that helps dull the pain of everyday life. Like, it's hard to be out in the marketplace. It's hard to be out in functioning in the world, in an unkind world. And when I return home and my wife is fruitful, the wine actually gets better with time. Like, we're now celebrating 23 years in marriage, and I can confidently say that year by year, it's gotten sweeter and sweeter. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lost message about marriage. Mm-hmm. Is that marriage gets better and better and better, or it certainly can in the Lord.
Yes.
If it is true that my destiny is to be transformed to the image of Christ Jesus, it means that my 80-year-old self is supposed to be more like the Lord than my 40-year-old self. Mm-hmm. And if that's happening on the wife's side too, mm-hmm. that means that together it's getting better and better and richer and deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think there's the tendency, you know, this is really kindredly linked. And I think you're going to find a lot of referencing back to that last episode about the soul. Because it is a wellspring. It is a starting point. So when something is corrupt in my soul, so I find that I'm really impatient with my children or with Mark, or I'm really not gracious or generous. I don't want to be generous, or I'm struggling with envy, any sort of vicious sin, there is the tendency to want to look to my husband to fix it. Well, we just need to have more money, or we need to have a different situation in this circumstance, you know, to turn to him to say, this is your fault. And that is something that's broken in my own heart in that moment. And so I think what I have learned, you know, in the 23 years of marriage, and it has been slow growth with the Lord, has been over time that you see this refinement of being patient and waiting. When I have an offense, or when I notice that I'm like ruffled, I'm feeling anxious, I'm something, any of those red flags and warning signs are kind of indicating something's off, rather than first going to Mark, first going to the Lord about it. And what I mean by that is to actually have my soul examined with the Holy Spirit by the Lord to say, what is like, what am I not seeing? What am I not hearing correctly? Because something is out of order in my heart. And when the Lord can bring, it may be because somebody else has done something that's not right. There might be something that needs correction, not just in myself. But when I come into right order with the Lord, then I can bring something to Mark whether it's an offense that I have with him or something that I'm frustrated that he did that hurt, you know, our home or whatever it is that I'm, or if there's a desire that I have that I feel is being unmet, I can bring that to him from a sense of peace with the Lord so that I'm not looking to him to actually bring me peace that he can't actually bring me by satisfying something because it's actually something broken in my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well said.
So I think when we talk about the wife vine, it's very funny, you know, like when you're out playing a metaphor, there's always a place where it's going to break down and there's a, you know, there's also you're dealing with the limitations of that. But I think that sometimes culturally there's so much talk of egalitarianism and looking for what, how is it that we don't just end up in this limited place of this means all men should and all women should type of route. So I know that there are probably some of you who are thinking or envisioning that like barefoot and pregnant woman, like this means that I need to stay at home and I need to, you know, just be having babies and that's my work. Is this what you're speaking to?
Wait, I'm not saying that.
I know. I know you're not.
What I'm saying is that part of fruitfulness is the womb. The womb is a place that incubates life mm-hmm. and is fruitful. So that is absolutely to be celebrated and maximized. Yes. And the Lord does that well. He does all things well. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the design. But the fruitfulness expresses in lots of different ways.
Agreed.
It is the beauty of the home. It is the tenor of the home. It's what music is playing in the home. Mm-hmm. It's what's on the table and what is on plates. It's all of these things that I, as a husband, I'm just woefully underprepared and not really designed for those kinds of things. And I know that there's men who cook and I know that there's, I'm not talking about division of labor. I'm talking about the overall sense of what that home is.
The atmosphere of the
yeah.
home. Yes, agreed.
So like I run around and do yard work and I make sure that these super old cars stay running and have tires on them. Mm-hmm. There's certain division of labor things that I do preoccupy myself with, but there's these really distinct things that make the home amazing when you're in it. So it's mm-hmm. like when you're out of town and the kids are with me, it's rough. And everybody knows.
If our kids were here, they would
and
agree.
And make jokes about it. But
I mean, they're taken care of. It's not rough in that way. It's just the sweetness. You know, it's very, for those of you who don't know Mark, he is a minimalist in a way that I am not. And although I do like to be aware, it is more of a it's more of a conscious discipline for me. Whereas for Mark, he is, you know, when we first were engaged, he didn't even have a bed. He lived in a sleeping bag in a room, rolled up every day. So it's that kind of, he liked the idea that all of his possessions could fit in a backpack, which is on one level, very romantic and, you know, great. But I remember my mom saying to him, well, you're going to have to get a bigger backpack, you know, or my daughter's not going to enjoy sleeping in a sleeping bag. And so there is this dynamic that we work really, really well together because of the ways our giftings and the ways they outplay in our home. And for your home, it might be very different. You know, your husband, as he mentioned, may enjoy, you know, being in the kitchen and, you know, be a gourmet chef or enjoy, you know, other elements, decorating or shopping for furniture design that he doesn't really enjoy and really looks to me in that way. And there are ways like I'm not very mechanically minded. I don't actually think of the details on my car very well. And I am learning now that our sons are no longer living here. I am learning like how to work in the yard beyond just the garden in a way, just because that's what our home requires now. So there are ways that those specifics, I think we have the tendency to focus on the nuance, looking for meaning in that nuance or trying to discredit something because it doesn't look or feel familiar. And so I do think it's really great that you're clarifying, Mark, that you're clarifying. This is about the abstract. We're talking about the atmosphere. The ways the specifics is going to vary home by home, based on the people in your home, based on the gifts in your home, based on the mission and direction of your home. So,
yeah, and I don't mean to say that there aren't clearly defined responsibilities or like headship and these things that, you know, God is going to look to the husband for reporting, like, how are you governing that home? Is it financially collapsing? Is, you know, did you choke off resources to your wife and she now is worried about the pennies on the grocery bill, and yet you're demanding filet mignon on Tuesday nights? Like, there's ways that there's you can abuse those responsibilities and those positions, but really the heart of what a husband is. Oh, we got a plane flying over. I'm sorry if you're picking that up. It sounds like it's crashing, but it's not. I don't remember where I was on that, but essentially there are some things that are uniquely the responsibility of a husband versus a wife, but it doesn't come down to who's chopping the carrots.
Mm-hmm. That's well said. Okay. So let's change gears just slightly to talk about how the fruitfulness, if we talk about on one level, the tending of our own soul can add and be a wellspring of life within the home, how does the tending of a marriage actually create a wellspring within the home? So we've talked a little bit about the atmosphere and we're creating, you know, whether it's table culture, whether it's actually imparting things into our children or the training of our children or the literal care of a house, which is a lot of work in and of itself. So, but how is the marriage itself, the joy of marriage? How do you, maybe we should talk a little bit about how we actually create joy in marriage. You mentioned a little bit ago that there's kind of this buried narrative in culture, at least we don't hear it very often, that long marriage is a gift and a delight. Mm-hmm. And that instead you kind of hear cultural narrative, and I'm not talking about, you know, maybe within your own community, but the larger cultural narrative is that the longer you're married, you're like, of course, there's this camaraderie that you're in something together, but there's also this kind of like, I'm annoyed with you, or I now know all these like tics that you have, and I'm kind of like rolling my eyes in the corner, or like you're kind of enduring the person and their, whether it's their vices or just something about their nature and temperament, rather than it being that source of joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how many times have you been around friends or extended family and you just see marriages marked by like snippy, snide remarks, like hard joking that it's like, oh, that's
a mockery of one another.
Yeah. Or constant vexation and frustration with the other person not being this or that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that is very normal. And also the increase in husbands and wives who don't even share the same bedroom. Mm-hmm. We've encountered a lot of that in sort of counseling situations, conversations with people. You know, I'm always going to want to push this conversation back to like the fire tornado concept, which is about sex and intimacy and the way that those two things play off of one another. Mm-hmm. And I think that you ignore the one to the detriment of the other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll keep this very G-rated, but it's just this idea of what you really want in a marriage is a fire tornado, which is it's intimacy that leads naturally and joyfully to sex. Mm-hmm. And the sex actually increases intimacy. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that like it's not true 100% of the time, but often it is the case that there is a higher interest in emotional connection and intimacy on the wife's part and a higher emphasis on sex on the husband's part. Mm-hmm. I know that that's not 100%, but that is a trend that we see often.
We're just going to go with it.
We're going to go with it. Well, one of the things that we talk about with men is that you can only really control one of those parts, which is you can initiate and make the investment on intimacy. If you will start initiating on the intimacy part, and by that I mean long walks around the neighborhood, time where you just have wine time after dinner. Mm-hmm. If there's those moments where there can be actual heart connection, where you're sharing the interior parts of your world, you find, hey, we really like each other a lot. And why don't we do this more?
Yeah.
And when that's happening, it naturally leads most of the time, oftentimes, to sex. And the sex creates more desire for the more connection. It's a strange dance that God orchestrated and wove into the fabric of marriage. And the more attentive that you are to that, you know, I can influence the one. I can initiate the one that I know ministers to the need of my wife or my husband. And that can help the thing start to spin.
Absolutely.
And you get a good fire tornado going and it warms up the whole house.
That's true.
You know, people like being in that warm house of affection and love and tenderness and excitement and all of those things. And your kids should know, man, dad is way interested in mom. Mm-hmm. That should be normal.
And vice versa.
Yes.
And I think, like, even, you know, with sex, like, as I have, of course, like, in marriage, part of the long term of marriage is learning one another physically and learning what delights the other. That's one of the joys. That's one of the joys of marriage. And when you see sex as actually not a problem or something to overcome, but as
or to
the
be
delight,
negotiated,
right.
Yeah.
Or something to make negotiated. So much so that even, you know, when you are in a stressful circumstance, you know, when finances are tight or you're dealing with like really difficult things with your children or, you know, whatever, it's like something is hard happening at work or, you know, whatever it is, we all have stressful circumstances that come to our households to know, oh, we need to have more sex because that will infuse more joy and delight into our household. And it's something that's free. We just have to make time for it. And we need to like actually come to this in, you know, prepared to be with one another. But to see this is actually a gift for delight and pleasure as much as it is for the fruitfulness of childbearing, that it is also for the fruitfulness of joy and the building up of that unity that comes together. So
yeah, which leads back to the wife vine concept, right? That fruitful vine that produces, and over time, the wine gets sweeter and sweeter over time. It means that the intimacy of marriage, it just gets better.
Mm-hmm. And I think being something that, depending on, once again, your origin stories, like how sex was introduced to you as a child or as a person coming of age, how just all of those narratives that kind of form us and experiences that form our ideas of sex, or how open the communication was, you may or may not be comfortable talking about it within your own marriage, talking about your own body, talking about your own needs, mm-hmm. talking, let alone talking about someone else's. And so that may be new vocabulary that you have to develop. And I encourage, if that is something that you kind of feel uncomfortable or awkward talking about, to find ways to become comfortable with it. Hmm. Because you're in it for the long haul. And the minute that you start removing sex from marriage, you are killing your marriage. Hmm. It's an active death to your marriage because you need it.
I was just thinking about one other tip on this that surfaces again and again with the young couples that we work with is, the scriptures are clear about the commands to the husband. Husbands, love your wife, right? As Christ loved the church. But also there's a command to women to respect their husbands. And I think that's interesting that the commands are unique to each one of those roles. And we have a friend of ours who says that, you know, they were having some marital friction and it had been true for years. And at one point, this guy says, to his wife, you know, I love you. At one point, they're just driving down the road. And she says, I love you. And he says, you know what would bless me more? Because I know you love me. That's not the question in my heart. The question in my heart is, do you respect me? It would mean more to me if you would swap that out and just say, hey, husband, I respect you. He said, when he said that to her, she was really taken back by it because she didn't ever think that there was a question about that. And when he expressed that, that was a question mark in his mind, she said, I can do that. And so she started to do that. And it really changed a lot in their dynamic. And I think that there's a lot of husbands who know that their wives love them, but the respect issue is actually the thing that men crave more than just the love.
Mm-hmm. And that would be an example of kind of what we were talking about last time, about the times where the liturgies of our life actually are impacting our heart, where it can actually derive. So if you aren't feeling a desire for sex, whether it's just low libido or whether it is like a lack of attraction, or maybe you feel insecure about your own body or your own person, whatever it is, because we're human and we all have these things we have to work through, to push into it and not away from it.
That's a good point.
To be curious about, why is this hard for me? What is it that is, you know, that makes me not want to have this type of intimacy? What is it like, if I've got an insecurity about, what is it like, how can I actually tend that part of myself that needs to feel more confident or that needs to feel more comfortable? You know, whatever it is, but to actually be curious and not just excuse it as, that's just how I am, you know, which I think we have the tendency to do about a lot of areas of life, but in this particular area. So as you know, we've been talking about this a little bit, but I want to talk about how we make time. I think it'd be really helpful to talk about date nights or making time for one another and how we've done that over the course of our marriage, because that actually, speaking to that fire tornado picture, if you can tell, we're like word picture people, metaphor people. So there will probably be a lot of those as we continue. But as you talk about that fire tornado of physical sex, which we've talked about, but that longing, that intimacy, because that can be a true barrier to sex if people don't feel seen or that their needs are being met in other ways, emotional mm-hmm. ways, or even practical physical ways, that it can be hard to bridge that barrier into physical intimacy. So that date night. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, date night is mm-hmm. an obvious one to prioritize. Yep. That weekly or biweekly, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that there's other rhythms that help too. Okay. So
let's talk about ways specifically, so we can offer some concrete ways that we've done that over the years since they were little. So sometimes, you know, depending on the economy of your home, depending on, you know, how much in your budget you have to allot to a date night, it might be more practical to do it at home. There was a large time in our family where we just did date nights at home because it was easier. Easier financially, it was easier like to avoid the
logistics,
the logistics of babysitting. Our children went to bed early when they were young. So we had a standing date night and we would put aside technology and phones, even though it was a very different scale at that time. But we would kind of disconnect from the outside world and then just create a physical space for us to be undistracted together. Mm-hmm. I would encourage any couples who are really wrestling for that, getting out of like the logistical madness of getting out of the house to somewhere, to try that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other ways too. Mm-hmm. So initiating prayer together to start a day before mm-hmm. Anybody heads out the door, ending the day in prayer. Those are like, that's not the hardest thing in the world. And the dividends of it are you're reconnecting to the Lord and with one another. You know, you pray together, that increases intimacy, mm-hmm. full stop, period.
I think also another one of my favorites in the early years where we would have coffee together mm-hmm. and it might've been a 15-minute coffee before you'd leave for work, before I'd get started with our homeschool day, but it was just time usually we'd sit outside on the porch or in the backyard and just enjoy 10 to 15 minutes before we both split up into our days. And they weren't necessarily that there was anything specific we accomplished in that time. It was really more about the accumulation of that time and just that touch point that we were making together before we split up to go about our work for the day. Are there any
walks around the neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, we did that after dinner walks with the kids when they were younger. We'd load them into strollers and bikes, take and a family walk.
There was like the annual summit, the family summit. So that was a rhythm point that we did. We started doing quarterlies that we would just go for a night away and revisit what we did on our annual summit meeting. Abrahamswallet.com. Has a download where you can get the summit guide and how to do a year of planning on a long weekend with your husband or wife. That was really huge. I think that was has been a big momentum shifter for us. And then, you know, other than that, texting each other, calling each other in the day and just say, just checking in. How are you doing? What, you know, what do you need? Those are the kinds of things that really matter a lot.
Yeah. And I think even I would say, One other way, just as a final thought, has been at the end of the day. So the re-entrance point, if you are a mother who's either staying at home with your children or and or homeschooling, but even if your children are, you know, in a hybrid program or away at school and you're picking them up, you know, it's like that point when dad comes home can feel like a, oh my gosh, finally, like kind of moment, especially when you have small children. And so I think having that communication point of that transition has been really helpful. And that might come up more in conversation for the next episodes where we talk more about the family. But for here, it's like being in communication, learning to trust one another so that we can speak freely, but also learning to navigate our own hearts and keep keep that in order with the Lord so that we're not overly abusive or burdensome of the other person.
Yep. Well said. The next couple of episodes are going to focus on one episode will be on sons and one will be on daughters. So look forward to that coming up. Take care. Oh, yeah. Also, you can visit Bethany on cloisteredaway.com. We should say that periodically.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you sure can. All right. And otherwise, we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Take care.